What does growth look like in your business, in your life? As a business owner, executive, or individual, you can live and lead with intention to create the change you want to see in your community and the world. Welcome to the Discerning Strategies Podcast, a place where we can see clearly and act wisely. Welcome to the Discerning Strategies Podcast. I'm your producer, Dee Daniels, along with your host, Michael Messer. And Michael, this is going to be a great episode where we kind of take a moment, we take a breath, and we sort of look at where we've been and look at where we're going and really take in all the wonderful guests that we've had on this podcast so far.
That's the sound of me exhaling, everybody, because I'm looking back and I'm like, wow, we've covered a lot of territory just in the first season of this podcast. And to be honest, there are some things that came up that kind of surprised me a little bit, Dee.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's been a theme, and, you know, the theme has been, you know, not secret. I talk about it like every episode, which is, you know, what does it mean to be intentional in your business? And how do you drive community partnerships and create positive change? So that was kind of self-evident when we started the conversation. What surprised me is just how some like really deep and important things are kind of embedded in that. One of them was this idea of democratization. It came up like 4 or 5 times.
Yes.
This idea that as business, you know, there are people out there that are looking to expand access to things that a lot of us take for granted, and that we think we live in a democracy. And so, you know, all voices are heard. But, you know, there were some perspectives that were raised that really challenged that idea. Like, is that really true? I mean, I remember specifically Maya Phillipson. I think it was like episode 7, maybe, in which she was talking about how, you know, the financial system impacts all of us. It impacts every business that we are customers of. And, you know, many of us own stocks and bonds and have retirement and think in those terms. But then there's an entire segment of the population that just can't. And so therefore, what does that say about what the financial system is representing, doing, and articulating with respect to that part of the population? And we talked to 3 or 4 guests that are really in that space trying to turn it around and say, no, this, we can think about inclusion much more broadly. So that was cool to me, this idea of democratization. Democracy seems to be on every, you know, seems to be a talking point these days. And so the fact that it showed up so strongly in so many different places, just in our, you know, in our discussions, is kind of interesting to me.
We kind of had an unintentional hot topic. You know what I mean?
A little bit.
We kind of did. Like, it wasn't, that wasn't the plan necessarily to have that be a running theme through several episodes, or not necessarily a theme, but something that popped up, you know, and it was, and I agree with you. And I feel like it was, especially with that episode with Maya, I agree. I really enjoyed that episode. I loved the way that she talked about this whole fact that like the financial world is all of us, and yet all of us do not feel necessarily represented, and we do not feel like we can jump on a hamster wheel that we might want to jump on sometimes. And I loved the way that was a very real thing that she talked about. And I felt seen as a person. I loved the way that she talked about that.
Well, she talked about so much. She talked about, you know, the people that are, you know, kind of most represented in the financial system, are, you know, people, frankly, that look like me. I'm like a cis white guy that, by the way, had a Wall Street career. So, you know, accident. Right. Apparently, statistically, that is not the case. You know, she was really drawing out the fact that, you know, they had to lump women and pretty much all people of color into a single category to get the number of money managers that, you know, are not basically male and white to show up on a graph. 1.3% of asset managers, she said, are not essentially the white male demographic, which, you know, we always talk about, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. That's, you know, a value that got expressed by almost every single guest that we had at some point, right? But I almost feel like we're so inculcated and we're so used to that, that the thing that gets our attention is like, oh, wow, here we have a firm that's actually run by queer people of color that are intentionally trying to create a firm that wants to be seen as absolutely different and absolutely inclusive. And it wasn't just about race or gender, but it was education. It was, you know, socioeconomic. It was like really kind of a very intentional, going back to my favorite word, look at what do these systems actually mean for us? And then turning around, and I remember she said at one point, like, making money and being successful, like, this isn't about charity, is how she proves that she's winning. And so you can take this kind of, like, you know, she talked about it in terms of, like, deviation. She used the word deviation, you know, as something different, but really kind of showing the world that you can choose to deviate and still win. And that means money. And I think that's really empowering. That's like, that's cool. I've really thought a lot about that conversation since we had it.
And we know what those types of systems get us. Late stage capitalism that is incredibly extractive and is destroying our planet. I would like to try something else. I don't have a guarantee that it will work, but I'm pretty sure if I put different inputs into the system, I'll get a different output. And the output I'm getting right now is not good. So I'm willing to try something else.
You know, so, you know, Adesina, like, you and your co-founder, you know, Adesina is led by BIPOC, woman of color, LGBTQ plus identifying individuals. And you've got incredible representation in terms of, like, who's on your team. And that's all intentional. That's by design, right?
It is, absolutely. Because we're trying to create, you know, within the structure of finance, I still, you know, I have an asset management firm, but I'm trying to create something else. And I'm trying to create a system within finance that can move us to a slightly better place.
I'd like to talk a little bit about, too, I don't think we were very shocked by episode 2, but I think the lasting effect that it has had, that's really brought up a great conversation, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Eric Glass he brought up so much, like, the democratization topic came up, which was fundamentally what Eric was talking about is there are communities here that have been completely bypassed by traditional finance or traditional, you know, they're not getting the funds, they're not getting the budgets, they're not, you know, essentially our values are our budget. And if you think about it, you know, we've allowed infrastructure to just crumble for people, whether that's hospitals, whether that's schools. And he was talking about how does that make people feel? So, you know, his version in his worldview, finance and the municipal bond market, which is like this kind of arcane thing to the average person, doesn't go around their day thinking about tax exempt municipal bond debt. Eric does, but he thinks about it in terms of, how can I use this market that's enormous to uplift communities from a racial and economic justice perspective because they've been passed over? What would it mean if we took money and we were really intentional about putting it to use to not just tell the people that live in these communities that they matter, but that they're part of this future that we as a country want to be creating for ourselves? And that benefits all of us.
Well, first of all, I'm a sucker for the origin story, and man, he has a good one. And if you haven't heard that, it's so good. But am I remembering correctly that he was really influential in the school system in Philadelphia? Is that I'm remembering
well,
that correctly.
Well, he didn't talk about, you know, certainly the school system as being, you know, an area where we see these disparities, right? Who hasn't walked past a public school in some neighborhoods and kind of looked at it and thought, boy, that doesn't feel like a very cheery place to grow right. up, or that doesn't, you know what I mean? And it's sad when we think about urban blight, like we're talking about the institutions that literally shape us as a nation, schools, yeah. hospitals, roads, green space. But what was really interesting also, I think that Eric mentioned, is this idea about being defensive about a topic when you're trying to do good versus being offensive. So he actually mentioned, you know, he was talking about impact investing, and which basically means, you know, deploying money intentionally in a way that's going to move the needle on a social cause, right? And he drew the distinction about, you know, ESG, so environment, social, governance. We hear about that sometimes for larger corporates as being this defensive idea. Like shareholders want to know this because they fundamentally are interested in managing their own risks and their own exposure. When what that really means is exposure to us or exposure to the outcomes of their own decisions, like, you know, climate change, for example. And then he drew the distinction about what it means to be offensive and how that's like the next evolution or the current evolution of where we're at, which is to say, it's not enough to just call it out and say, oh, we're calculating our carbon footprint, or we're being mindful of the types of social and governance and environmental issues that are being raised by us as a business, but actually taking money and going to the root cause and trying to reverse the things that are actually causing those externalities, those things that don't look and feel or serve us. And I thought that was a really interesting way to look at what this movement is really about.
I agree. And I think that it sort of brought this interesting phrasing up in my mind that was like, you know, we hear about it in the nutrition world, right? Like wellness and holistic and organic. And I've never really heard much of that in the financial world. And I felt like he was bringing, like, get to the root cause, like putting intentional money in intentional places to get all the way down. It's like a whole different way of doing things. It's like flipping the food pyramid upside down and everybody going, wait, what are we doing here?
Well, no, I think it's exactly right. Like it's taking something as dry as the municipal bond market and saying, actually, we can use this thing that's always existed for the last 100 years and actually use it to create, you know, in your words, better health outcomes. You know, I know for a fact that his organization and his background and things that he's done, like, you know, he did some investing in the water system to support Newark, New Jersey to change out lead pipes in Newark. And they wanted to change out 18,000, I think, lead pipes. They did 23,000. Imagine, what does it mean to not have lead in your water?
Right.
What does it mean for your health, for your educational attainment, for your ability to economically develop areas that have that particular issue? I mean, it really is. It's not just I'm making an investment and then getting a financial return and a good thing happen. It really is starting to move a few needles in a way that has spillover effects that just uplift all of us.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting.
I actually am very, very appreciative and very thankful to AllianceBernstein, because they actually gave me, for the most part, they gave me the autonomy and agency to kind of do what I wanted to do. And so I actually had a startup within a large existing organization. And so I didn't necessarily have to go out and raise. I mean, we obviously raised money but we didn't have to do, you know, various Series A. You know, we didn't have to do a venture. We didn't have to do a friends and family round. We didn't have to do angel. We didn't have to do series, you know, A through E or what have you. We just sort of crafted a product and a message that I thought would be resonate with clients who are predisposed to think about these social and environmental issues and these inequalities. And the idea that here's a specific, like in terms of dealing with this municipal finance sector, this is a very foundational way to influence the economic development and the economic wherewithal of communities through infrastructure. And so it's very proximate. Like we often joke about the municipal market being the original impact market. Because when you think about what municipalities are charged to do, whether that's to provide high quality education, healthcare, access to clean water, sanitation, promote a transition from fossil fuels to renewables, affordable housing, you know, these are mass transportation. These are things that are foundational to just and sustainable communities. And so it's just a natural fit, a natural outgrowth. And so I just really sort of tapped into that. And it's just sort of, and it resonated with the financial advisors on our private wealth side to the extent that, yeah, we were able to raise about $1.5 billion over a 4-year, 5-year period. And I think the company was just really, I mean, AllianceBernstein as a whole was very happy. It was a new sort of a new business unit of sorts, right? That we could sort of launch. And what ended up happening thereafter was developing, you know, values-based portfolios, you know, this notion of meaningful money, if you will. And so it was, you know, it just so happened that it had a modicum of success, of commercial success. I guarantee you that if it did not have that commercial success, I would have, they would not have kept funding it. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind about that. I think we're at a moment, we're at a corporate moment right now where, you know, I was asked to be an impact investor, and as an impact investor, I also see myself as an advocate and an activist around the things that I think our clients want to see. Now the question becomes, you know, is that always aligned with the C-suite? And I would argue in traditional asset management firms right now that advocacy and activism in many, many cases does not align well with that. And there tends to be, there can be values misalignment, and there are issues associated with that.
One of the things too that we talked about with Eric that was so interesting was talking about raising money and how hard it is for the average person to engage in impact investing and what that meant. And we talked about like, hey, wouldn't it be cool like to crowdfund and crowdsource some of this stuff? And what would that mean if the guy on the street could do this and really vote with your wallet in a sense? And, you know, we also talked about this with Maya. Well, then we talked to Marcia Dawood about VC. And, you know, she's running this podcast called The Angel Next Door. And she's like, no, that's it. Like, it's how you can, on a much smaller scale than anyone ever thought possible, put money towards a company that wants to solve a problem in the world that you're passionate about. Really loved that episode because it opened my eyes and it really made me think differently about, you know, as a finance person myself and having looked at more than a few companies and how they work over the course of my career, I was like, wow, that's a way that I can be personally impactful that I had never even considered.
Anytime that you're looking at a startup company or really any type of company that you're going to help, having that passion for what they're working on is just something that's going to fuel you to help them even more, to open your Rolodex, to or in this case, your iPhone contact app, and you know, allow them to get the help that they really need. And I'll give you an example. So at one point, I was within a group, and we could talk about funds in a minute. It was a fund, and we were looking at a company that had to do with fishing. Well, I'm not a fishing person, so you know, I wasn't going to get super excited about it, although I did learn a lot about fishing, I'll tell you. But but so that maybe for me wasn't the thing that I was going to go, hey, I got to help, you know, this company. But then, you know, there was another company that was working on something for women's health, and I got very involved with that company and started helping them and was an advisor. And so, you know, those are the types of things. You find the things that really resonate with you. And, you know, for a while, you might help them for, you know, a couple months, a year, 2 years, whatever. And then, you know, maybe there's another, they grow out of you and they're on to bigger things. And at least that's what you're hoping. And then you can go on and help others. And you've learned from the experience. I learned from every single startup that I ever talked to.
Yeah. And it's no surprise that those episodes that we have mentioned have been some of our most listened to episodes so far, because it is, I think it is also bringing up so many follow-up conversations with people when they hear it. It's this thing of like, oh my gosh, yes, we can do more. We can do more even in our lane, even with our talents, even with our little slice of wherever we are on earth. We can do those. We can do things. And they gave us permission almost in a different way. Do you know what I mean? It was almost this green light of like, this is how, and yes, we can.
Well, not only that, but I think that, you know, the words small but mighty kind of come to mind, because, you know, each of these types of businesses, and they're really talking about kind of flipping the script, changing the paradigm on the way we do things. And the paradigm is so big. We're so just overwhelmed with these business messages all the time. But the fact of the matter is there's really a movement starting to be created behind it. And there are so many people that we don't even recognize that are really passionately committed to making these systems work for more people, you know. And that's not, you know, this is not zero sum. This isn't like I have to redistribute wealth and, you know, from the haves to the have nots. It's saying, what would our world look like if everybody had access and we supported, right, people that conventionally haven't been given the benefit of a doubt, haven't been valued for having a different background, a different perspective, a different way of being, you know? That sounds very coachy as it comes out of my mouth. Sorry. I can't help it. I'm always a coach, people. But yeah.
Once a coach, always a coach.
Exactly. But you know, it's not a small, I mean, it's small in relationship to the vastness of business, I think, globally. But it's growing. And I think that there are more and more people that are starting to really pay attention, and whether or not they know these opportunities exist, this desire to see business be better. So that's one of the things that I think I'm most excited about, how some of these conversations played out. But we also, you know, we had a different type of person that we talked to as well, which was we talked to a number of small business owners as well.
That's right.
And what's so interesting is, you know, you can take some of the ideas that, you know, impact investors and, you know, municipal bond investors and angel investors are talking about, but they're all relevant ideas to people that are just trying to do the good thing in their own small business. Kelsey, you know, from Week of the Website, you know, was really talking about, and Caroline and you know, Sandy, they all talked about authenticity and creating a space where people felt like they could work and be themselves, and the importance of having different points of view and being able to support that, and why that was important to the success of their business. I mean, Caroline specifically, what it meant for her to create values around inclusion in her business, even though she's a pretty small business, right? Yeah, she's been doing it for a while. She has a small team, but she really lit up the fact that, like, it's not performative. Like, she had values around this, and they use those values every single day when thinking about answering business questions. And that, I think, is important for us just to see.
So good. And I think the authenticity piece for me, not only are these business owners creating a space for people to work and show up authentically as themselves, but they're leading by example as a business owner by being authentic themselves. And I found that so refreshing. And I found that to be, this is how one thing leads to another. I, as a business owner, want to run a business and create an environment where I can be authentically me. And therefore, I want to create an environment where that is welcome. And I think once you start that, it's such a great ripple.
Well, what's so interesting too is like the way authenticity shows up, right? Like, you know, Sandy Prosnant said it really well. She's like, for her, authenticity was doing something that she really enjoyed wherever she was. Like, it was like almost like redefining what success is. And a number of people that we talked to actually said, I don't need to be a multimillionaire to feel successful about my business. I want to feel comfortable. I want to feel good about what I'm doing. I want to feel that I have meaning and purpose. And I want to feel like I have kind of this whole life, like, you know, whole cloth, you know, this like expansive feeling of like really being present and doing the thing that's going to work for you. And I think it's really hard sometimes as a business owner, because it is hard. It is a hard journey to be an entrepreneur, to give yourself permission and to let yourself think that way. Because the conventional wisdom says, you've got to go hard or you've got to go home or you're going to fail. But like implicit in that kind of attitude is, no, there's different ways that we can be business owners. We can do the good thing. We can still have the good life, and we can be inclusive while we do it. So, you know, even though we had guests that were coming from really different spectrums, like there was this interesting commonality, I think, in the way they kind of looked at what are we trying to achieve through business?
Cosmore. So it's almost like it sounds like you were actually kind of adjacently building your brand in a way around cause marketing without investing a dollar into putting that message out there, other than just showing up and doing the thing that you already love doing.
Yeah, basically.
That is so cool.
And I didn't even know what cause marketing was until I started doing cause marketing. It was so natural. And now we work with a ton of the nonprofits locally and beyond.
So you've done three different campaigns now, mm-hmm. and you've developed this identity within the community around cause marketing. Where is this taking your business? Help me understand, like, what's the arc here in terms of where you think you're going, given this foundation you've built?
That's a great question. I really don't know where it's going. You know, a lot of people want to scale their business, right? They want to grow. They want to be huge and make massive amounts of money. I don't. I'm interested in living a comfortable life, mm-hmm. giving back to causes that matter, and just being a good human being. And a lot of, I think, the give back is part of being a good human being. You know, initially I was giving back to several different nonprofits after the first campaign. And I would drop $50 here and $100 there and 10% of the profits from whatever month to three different nonprofits. And my clients would get to choose, which was really cool for them.
Yeah.
But then one of the things that I also learned is make sure that the nonprofits that you're giving back to are nonprofits that you personally care about. And that the impact that you can have is a lot stronger when you say, okay, these are my two or three favorite nonprofits that I really want to support, and you're able to give more to those individual nonprofits than $50 that really, what's that going to do? What's that going to impact? What's that going to provide for the nonprofit?
I love what you're saying, because you're actually touching on two things that I think are so important. You're talking first and foremost about your own personal authenticity all the way through this, right? And the way that authenticity is kind of showing up for you is, it's like you know what you want for yourself. You don't need to scale your business. You don't need to like be something that you're not because somebody else told you. But the other thing you're talking about, which listeners to this podcast will know, I use this word all the time, is you're really intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you were like, hey, it's not enough for me just to give to random nonprofits, but you want to continue to fuel your purpose, and you want to feel really connected to the impact you're having. And so you're selective about it.
Absolutely.
You're intentional about it.
Mm-hmm.
I love watching these themes kind of pop up and you know, these common denominators. And I think one of the ones that we are not shy about, Michael, is the conversation around being an intentional business. You know, we're not shy about that intentional piece at all. I think there were so many great episodes that touched on that, if not almost all the episodes that somewhere touched on that, starting with, by the way, the very first episode, which was such a wonderful look into your life and how that intention has shaped your life. And really, I mean, it's a great story. If you haven't listened to it, it is our very first one. What a great place to start. Start at the beginning is what they say. And we did.
Yes. You know, everybody, I think, is entitled to one good story, and I shared it here. That's my one good story, everyone. So the next time you catch me on a TEDx, you might be hearing the same thing.
It's a good one.
So, you know, seriously, though, like, you know, this idea around intentional business, you know, the crux of it is all we need to do to be an intentional business is fundamentally decide that that's what we want to do. And it doesn't matter how big you are, how well resourced you are, what industry or what your business is, there is space within business to create good things in ways that actually are going to be really meaningful to you. And that might be the thing, honestly, that gets you through that rough patch. You know, you have ups and downs. You know, I have ups and downs as a business owner myself. And really getting clear on why am I doing this? Like, you know, what is the thing that I want to see in the world? You've got to tap into that motivation if you're going to look the tough times, you know, dead in the eye and put one foot in front of the other and push through it, because tenacity and resilience and mindset, I think, are kind of like the magic three things that every entrepreneur needs, right? And so, you know, find that thing that really motivates you, where you see yourself doing good, even if it's as small as just offering up your office space to a nonprofit, right? Like, just, it doesn't cost you anything. Use it.
Yeah, I love that. And one of the things too, we were talking briefly about Kelsey and her episode, which was episode 6, and the week of the website. If you haven't seen that, listen to it, look it up. It's good. It's really good. Around that conversation about being intentional, she had a really great way of talking about creating intentional teams within your business. I just loved how she really kind of pulled back the curtain on like the specifics of how she builds a very successful team within the structure of what they're doing. And I thought it was very easy for the rest of us to follow and very like, oh gosh, we could do that. We could do that. It was great tips.
Well, I mean, she's, you know, creating a virtual global team, right? She's got people that work for her all over the world. And, you know, I really remember one of the things that she said was, you know, clients come and go, but the people that actually make you successful, you've got to take care of. Right. And so, you know, this idea of understanding, you know, she had such a clear idea and clear understanding of like what she was going to do to support her team, what her responsibility to her team was, which was to allow them to be, you know, they're web designers, like creative, supportive, innovative, so that they can show up for the clients and, you know, keep the other stuff running in the background so that they all can create something beautiful at the end of the day. You know, she's created over 700 beautiful websites for businesses, you know, all over the world. But to do it in a way that honors the unique strengths, desires, and perspectives of the people that work for her, and how that's become an engine of actually attracting the type of people, really creating a virtual culture, if you will, even though they're all like, you know, 1099, right?
Right.
Employees, they're not, you know, none of them work just for her, but yet she can create intentionally a culture that both drives her business, drives client satisfaction, and creates good feeling with the people who are choosing to raise their hand and say, yeah, I'd like to partner with you.
Yeah. So. And one thing that really stuck out in that episode with her to me too was the word feedback. You know, she like opened the gates for feedback from her team members all the time. And I think that I find to be such a valuable just avenue of growth, right? I mean, it's like feedback. I want your feedback as a business owner, and you're a part of this team. I want your feedback. I want to know how we're doing, how we're growing, how we could do better.
Well, it's so funny you say that, because it takes me back to when we were talking about trust, right? And like, I talk about trust kind of a lot. We had an entire episode. I honestly don't even remember which one it was.
It was a good one.
But it's about communication, right? Like, how do you, and it's about connection. So connecting with somebody is, you use the word feedback. Kelsey used the word feedback, right? But it's also listening. It's giving agency to another person. It's signaling to them that they're, you know, someone who has value, and that you respect and honor their opinions, and you're willing to take that under consideration. What's interesting is, like, you juxtapose that with what Caroline was saying in her episode, and she was talking specifically about diversity, equity, and inclusion with something that really came from one of her employees. But she also turned around, she said, I had to think about it, because I wasn't sure at first if, like, that was the direction that we needed to go, until it was like, no, we need to do this. And it became clear for her. But she also said, listen, as the owner, as the leader of your firm, you don't have to take everybody's feedback. But what they both had in common is that they listened and they invited it, and they gave space for people to do that. And it's been foundational for both of their businesses in terms of how they show up and how they come across to their clients and everybody that comes in contact with them.
And I might hear that and think, well, but I'm the leader of the business. Like, I'm the one who should be setting the vision. And you can still use your discernment. And, you know, I don't go with every idea they bring to me, but I am listening for the things that do resonate. And, you know, why have a team if I'm not going to listen to them? Every good part of my business, I think it has come from my team.
I'm just being brought back to the ecosystem. You're creating the ecosystem. They're part of the ecosystem. They're bringing different things to the table than you do.
Exactly. And then it makes me stronger as a result, and it helps all of us. And because they bring that to me, you know, I do everything I can to also provide for them in the ways that I think employers should provide for their team.
Well, one of the other big topics, and I'm thinking of one episode in particular that came up on this, was authenticity and sharing your story around that, and how that being authentic can drive you to your purpose and where you're going next and to new goals and that sort of thing. And the episode that stuck out for me was one of our most recent episodes with Bananas Foster and Emily Cole.
Oh, yes.
Bananas. So good. I loved her story. Really, really just touching story. And where they're going is so inspiring.
Yeah. Emily, you know, and Jesse have this massive platform with the Savannah Bananas. I mean, she was saying that they have a 2 million ticket backlog for tickets to their games, right? So they're clearly doing something right in their business, but it was important for them. And they knew that if they were going to use this platform in a way that was going to be helpful, they needed to really feel and be invested in the success. And Emily told such a beautiful story about her journey of investigating, you know, foster parenting and what that's done for her, you know, Jesse, their family, but also how it's kind of really grew out of a lot of the key points of culture within the Savannah Bananas organization, and how it was so like how it just fit. Bananas are about entertainment and family and supporting families. And Emily was about supporting alternative families and giving space to people and children that really need the help. And it was about community too. And, you know, the Savannah Bananas, they bring the community together for these crazy, wacky games that they do. But how important it is that when you're doing this work to create a community around yourself to help you keep going. There was so much there. So,
you know, foster care in general and adoption and anything along those lines, I think breaks the mold of what hundreds of years ago it looked like to create a family. We've done this a little bit in our business. We say that we're a bananas family. We tell each other, I love you every day. There's a million business coaches and executives out there that would say that's the wrong thing to do. You're not supposed to mix business and pleasure. You're not supposed to be a family. It's not what we believe. And so we have kind of broken that mold of saying, this is how we create our family. This is who we're choosing to be in our family. And so from a professional sense, I think we've broken it in that sense where we have all become a family. You know, we've all moved to a new city and become brothers and sisters or, you know, aunt, uncle kind of figures to each other and mentors to each other. And Jesse and I have tried to do that in our personal life too. We've kind of broken that mold of, hey, we're going to settle down and we're going to the old fashioned way, have 2.2 children and live in our one house with a white picket fence. And that's just not our life. You know, there are tons of different people who come and stay with us at a certain time if they need to. And our home is just open to anybody. We basically live on the road. So we've broken that rule of, hey, we have to be settled down and have our perfect cookie cutter house that, you know, America has said this is the normal thing. You know, we don't live that lifestyle either. And we're just this kind of traveling group of people who are passionate about bringing positivity to other people, whether that's our biological children or others who have joined us along the way. You know, we're all one big family now, and we believe in that. And we're going to keep preaching that because I think everybody, if we all lived like that, there'd be a lot more love in the world. And so that's what we're going to focus on.
I agree. That was a highlight for me. And wow, we were I personally was just so honored that, you know, Emily would spend time with us to tell us that story.
It's such a good story. And yeah, they're going places. What a great platform to be able to, you know, have this conversation about families and those that are in need and children that are in need. It's so good. I wanted to ask you too, you always ask a very fun and like thoughtful question at the end of every episode, which is what rules or rule did you have to break in order to get to a place where you felt successful in your business and move forward in your business? The answers, I don't know. I'm thinking at some point in the future, we should just montage the answers to that question because the answers are always so interesting. Do you remember one particular that sticks out to you, like one answer, one guest that said something to that question that really stuck out to you?
I remember two, actually. The first one again was going back to Maya Phillipson from Adesina Social Capital. If I'm remembering what she said exactly, she said, you know, that I can create a firm full of people that just don't look like you expect. And that's breaking a rule. And that's actually where the whole winning comment came from, I think, you know, which is like, you know, I'm proving that this works because I'm winning every day. And that was just like, I had this like total you go girl, like girl power moment, like,
yeah.
You know, all of that. And the other one just really hit close to home because it's something that I need to break for myself. And it was when Caroline, when I asked Caroline, like, what rule have you had to break for yourself? She's like, she didn't even miss a beat. She was like, I had to break being a perfectionist. You can't do it. You can't, you know, you can't be an entrepreneur and hold that energy. You might think you can, but like, that's just not the way it works. And it was just a moment for me to connect with like, wow, that was like real talk for me. And I'm like, Michael, what can you learn from that? What do you need to let go of? That was like me coaching myself in my head, right?
Right.
So those are the two things that really stood out for me that I keep coming back to. I kind of push clients to start thinking about breaking things in their business, because what becomes available to you? Oftentimes the things that we break are the things that hold us back.
Mm.
And, you know, Emily's example of like, hey, like giving yourself permission to redefine what your family looks like has actually put her in a place where she is touching lives all across the country and providing support and community to foster parents and shining a light on, you know, she said something like 400,000 kids are in this system that are waiting for people to give them a hug.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's wow.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's super powerful.
Break the rules. Think about breaking the rules, people. Well, now, so you're asking me, you asked me a question. So now you've been kind of hanging back, listening to all these conversations, Dee. I'm really curious. What was your highlight from the season? Like, if you were to pick a thing where you were just like, yeah, that was the moment for you in the podcast, where would you point people to?
There were so many moments. You know, I guess one that really resonates with me and sort of rose to the top was Sandy Prosnitz, you know, talking about, I really loved the way that she talked about her business and community and charitable relationships as a whole, as one whole big circle in her life. And how do all those fit together? And, you know, where do you make time for those? And how does all that work seamlessly together for her? And one of the things that she said that stuck out to me so much was we were talking about networking as a business owner. When you go out to one of these networking events and you meet people and, you know, dot, 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 and you're doing your thing and your elevator pitch like we all do. And she said, you know, when I do these networking events, I never really lead with, so what do you do? I always lead with something personal, like, so what's your dog's name? And I just thought, that's brilliant. Like, and that was a rule, right? That I thought, that's a rule we should all be breaking too. We don't have to walk into these networking events, these business lunches, these whatever, and say, hi, my name is blah, 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 and I own XYZ business, and this is the product we're selling this week.
Absolutely. Because let's be clear. I mean, as the host of this podcast, everybody, I would much rather probably talk to your dog. I love dogs. So yeah, bring on the dogs. But, you know, to your point, I mean, you're really talking about humanity. And really, this gets me back to really the whole premise of what this conversation is about, which is like, people, humans are at the center of business, our communities. And business, in my worldview, is intending to serve people and not the other way. So that humanity, what's your dog's name, is great shorthand for the energy that we can all bring into our business or our career, because it's about people and authenticity again and connection.
Yeah.
And we're better off for it.
No doubt. No doubt. These have been such great topics, so much so that, Michael, I'm excited about what's coming next. And I think that the community, the listeners, the loyal people that are following this podcast are looking forward to what's next. And I think we're ready to take a little bit deeper of a deeper dive. Do you want to give everybody a little snippet of what's to come?
Yeah, I'll just tease it out, right?
Okay.
So again, I was so taken by so many of the people that we talked to. You know, over the summer, we're going to be having a set of kind of thematic conversations about that I'm dubbing meaningful money. And what that really means is, you know, people that are doing the work to flip the script on how businesses raise and deploy and activate money. You know, money makes the world go round, right? What's it making the world go round for? You know, we just touched on some of the themes that came up in casual conversation. Democracy, right? Inclusion, lifting people up. What does that really mean? People that are thinking differently about how we relate to our financial system, the rules of business. So yeah, we're going to be exploring that lofty topic, I think, coming up, which I'm really excited to see what that holds for us.
I am too. I think it's going to be great. And let me flip the script on you, Michael. In this introductory season of the Discerning Strategies podcast, what rules have you broken?
You know, that's a great question. I think the rule that I broke for myself is it was really important for me in this to show up as myself. So, you know, I come from a corporate background where people tend to get very measured and very like, you know, Instagram curated in terms of how they come across. And this is by far the largest platform I've ever tried to use to get my message out. And so the rule I broke for myself is don't sweat it, show up and trust that we're all just people having a conversation here. And that energy I'm trying to bring more and more into my business. So what you see, folks, is what you get. So thanks for taking the ride with me this last season. We've got more to come, and I can't wait.
I can't either. Filters off around here. So I think it's going to be great, Michael. I'm excited about where we're going.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Dee. And we'll catch up when we kick off this Mindful Money segment.
Absolutely. We'll see you then.
You can find Michael Messer at discerningstrategies.com. Set up a free 20-minute consultation. Clarify your goals, scale your business, amplify your impact. discerningstrategies.com.